Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.10. Ace was going to join us, but we ejected him for lightly shoving Dave. So before we do the podcast, we prepare, and this mostly consists of me doing my awesome accents.
Yes.
Like, I'm...
Very consistent, awesome accents.
Yeah, man, I gotta get down to the boogie board shop and buy some marijuana. That's my impression of Ace.
I knew that was coming.
We'd like to thank our sponsors. Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending. I'm sorry about that. Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantanamas, Human Element, Eco-Intelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. That's really just completely inappropriate.
Very professional.
Unjustified. Unjustified. Just kicking off the podcast.
Just taking a shot right off the bat.
Just calling Nasa. A boogie board enthusiast.
That was really the most cutting part of that. It wasn't the stoner accusation.
What is a boogie board? Is it like a little surfboard?
I think so.
Yeah.
My lack of clarity on this should probably tell you that I'm not an enthusiast.
Right, yeah. Anyway, so if you had one of those, you probably could have used it to get to the game. I have to see, that's a good segue.
Yeah, that was well done.
Thank you. Thank you. So I bailed.
Yeah.
And I think we should talk about this off the top just because, like, I had to tell people about it because I was going to be, like, talking about Spencer Tillman, who we'll get into in a little bit.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, I'm walking to the game and the heaviest thing starts coming down and I'm just soaked. I'm there with my wife. And my wife, God bless her heart, is lying her ass off about whether she wants to go to this game. She's like, no, it's fine. We can definitely go to the game. And I'm like, you know, I could stay here for another 5 hours and then go into the game.
Put your spouse through a horrible 4-hour-long experience.
Right. And I was like, but it wasn't really her that, like, I probably would have if she wasn't there, but she was. But I was just like, I don't want to do this, not only to my wife, but to myself.
Yes.
And it's like, both of these stupid Fox/Delaney night games have been punished by having weather that would not have happened if the game was going on at like a Michigan time.
Yeah, I kept looking out the window during the like afternoon games and was just like, yeah, this could be a time where they'd be playing football right now.
Or like, yeah, Michigan State gets a 3-hour weather delay and I'm like, where's that weather going to be in 3 hours? Turns out it was going to be hailing on me as I tried to walk to the stadium. Mm-hmm. So I'm soaked, my wife's soaked, and I'm just like, you know, I'm going to be sitting in the stands, and it's going to be the fourth quarter, and there's going to be like a review, and they're going to take a commercial break, and I'm just going to like lose it.
Yeah.
So I bailed, and I'm not proud of that. It sucks, but I just didn't feel like I wanted to put up with it. And that's where kind of the same experience is right now. It's like, do I want to put up with 6,500 commercials and people singing Sweet Caroline?
Oof.
Just like...
I did get upset when that came on.
Like, just like that, that's a thing that happens now. Like, we're the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah. I mean, that's not driving me away from the stadium, but it's also not an incentive to go.
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, but the commercial thing, you know, we had... a Twitter user sent us the data of like how long it took before they got to a commercial break.
You should shout out his name because he's done work for us.
Yes. So.
Oh, it's Black Engineer.
Yeah, it's Black Engineer. It's the Slim on Twitter compiled this, and in the entire first quarter, there are 5 commercial breaks, and at no point do you hit not even 9 minutes of real time before you get to the next one.
That's amazing.
Like, it's just...
And most of the time, it's under 7.
Yeah.
Of real time.
They didn't play a full 5 minutes of football at any point before getting to another commercial break. There were... Most of them, 3 of them were under 3 minutes of actual football.
And ooh, there's a long one in there.
Yes. You get some long ones at the end of quarters when they've just used up all of their commercial breaks.
So it's five more commercials.
But in the second quarter, you have three different times where they don't make it 3.5 minutes before going to a commercial
again. Of like real time.
Of real time, not football time. There was one where they had 50 seconds of actual football before going to another commercial, and it's the same deal. We had the 6 seconds of game time played with the touchdown commercial, kickoff commercial sequence.
Yes, I
in
remember
the third quarter,
that.
Which was infuriating.
So we have 20 commercial breaks in this game.
Yes. That seems like 10 too many.
It does.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And they're not playing much football between it. I caught myself, I'm not particularly used to watching a football game that I'm both not at and not writing up.
Right. You're just like laying on the couch like a potato.
Yeah, exactly. But I had to catch myself because I'd be looking at Twitter during commercial breaks and then look up and be like, oh shit, the game's on. Like, because I just was so used to tuning out every 6-7 minutes.
Yeah,
that it's tough to even stay focused.
So I feel like they're strangling the golden goose, because if I'm like, I don't even know if I want to do this, like,
you're pretty hardcore as fans go,
right? And people were like on me because I tweeted about it, because I felt like I needed to confess, and they were like, weak. And I was like, don't at me unless you have a 20-year attendance streak.
Yeah.
Don't at me.
Also, even if you're joking, just like, eh.
Well, a guy tried to play it off like he's joking, like, and he gave absolutely no indication that he was joking on Twitter.
Yeah, the thing about the Twitter is that tone is tough to convey, so you need to use words.
So anyway, there was a football game.
So, yeah, they play football.
They play football.
Neither of us were there.
Michigan wins 33-10 in a game that looked almost exactly like I expected it to look, except Michigan scored a lot more long rushing touchdowns than
yes.
I expected. So this is going to be a weird game where the blocking probably isn't going to grade out as well as it did against Rutgers, despite the explosive results, just because there aren't enough plays.
Yeah.
But wow, man, like, they ran that split flow counter from the Indiana game and it worked like almost every time.
Yeah.
And like,
and damn. Spencer Tillman called it like 17 different things
yes.
at once.
And they're running pin and pulls and they call it a stretch and they're running power and Spencer Tillman's calling it ISO. And I'm just like,
he called the same play an ISO, a counter tray, and a power all at once. One play.
Yeah.
One play. That you cannot possibly be all three of those things.
No.
But he did it.
He was deranged.
He was
out of his mind.
I think we're gonna have another segment on him later, but it's gonna be a hard time. It's gonna be hard
out
to
of
not
his
keep
gourd.
Coming back to it.
But like,
my God.
So they run the same split flow counter that they ran against Indiana, and it's on tape. Michigan has run it several times.
Yeah.
And they keep running it over and over again.
It keeps working.
And the same Minnesota linebacker is just, every time he falls for it, he's just like, oh, I got to go over here. And then he's chasing the play back to where it's actually going. And I'm like, dude, come on, dude. Like,
counter steps aren't supposed to be quite that effective.
Like, read the guard pull.
Yeah. Like, we know the fullback is messing with you a little bit, but like, he's been messing with you in this specific way all game.
I wanted to like call him and be like, buddy,
we need you to figure this out so we can see what Michigan does next. Look, we need to see an adjustment.
Buddy, you're a Big Ten linebacker. I need you to realize they're running the same play over and over again and do something about it.
Oh, man.
But they didn't.
No.
For the most part. So we just got a lot of explosive plays where the Minnesota cornerbacks were tasked with tackling guys. And as Seth mentioned when he did the FFFF, they have had a lot of injuries. They're playing a lot of young guys, and not one of those guys can run support worth a damn.
No.
So, you know, the first long Higdon touchdown, there's a cornerback who's like way out of position, and he's unblocked, and he should be able to shut that down for like 12 to 15 yards. Doesn't even lay a hand on Higdon. You know, Evans ran through one of their tackles.
Mm-hmm.
So back when Harbaugh was hired, like, one of the things I was talking about, the potential advantage of having this like extreme man ball approach, is you turn cornerbacks especially into primary run defenders because they're the guys who are unblocked. And in this game, that really paid off because Michigan was just running them over or running through them or doing various things to them that were not very nice.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. And they also managed to do that while not having Blake Onwenu.
That's true.
Who has been their best run blocker, I would say, over the course of the season.
Cole.
Right up there with Cole.
Yeah, I think.
Cole's very good.
They're close, which is a really good sign for Mike Onwenu, obviously.
But a pretty good sign for the future was that Cesar Ruiz was not much of a drop-off, it didn't seem like at first glance.
In the run game.
Brandon Peters probably has some things to say about Ruiz's pass protection.
Well, he got yanked.
If he can breathe this morning.
He got yanked immediately after allowing like a 360-pound guy
to thunder sack Peters. My God.
He got the ball out.
Yeah.
Did he? No, he got sacked. That was a sack.
He got sacked.
There was another.
That was the one where he landed on Peters and we waited for a little while for Peters to get up.
Yeah. Where he looked like Wile E. Coyote after a steamroller incident.
Yes.
So he gets pulled for Runyon immediately after that. So that's actually pretty interesting to me because Runyon has spotted Onwenu periodically. He's obviously got a couple more years of experience in the system. And for Ruiz to get the start, it implies that he's doing very well in practice.
Yes.
He's on track to be the starting center next year. And he's also a true freshman.
Yes.
So you get the downsides of that. But one of the things that leapt out when I watched the Parking God highlight video is that a lot of those big runs were going over the right side, and Bushel Beatty and Ruiz were blowing a guy out, getting to a linebacker, usually the linebacker who I was like, come on, buddy. Because he'd run into the other side of the line, and then it's an unusual.
He was a blockable linebacker.
Very much so. But a large part of the first long Higdon run is the fact that he had so much room to the inside because Michigan had just caved it in.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of like blowout blocks happening up on that side.
Yeah, and so this is like five games in a row where Michigan's moved towards being Stanford, just blowing people out, having huge gaps, and having running backs that hit those gaps efficiently. Which is, just Minnesota, just Rutgers, but the execution is getting towards very good, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, there were definitely moments in that game where, there's something about a power play when it's, or like the counter that Michigan runs where you got a pulling guard and it is blocked perfectly, where it's just a little slice of football nirvana.
Yeah.
And that Higdon first touchdown run kind of felt that way. Where you could like hear the pads smacking all at the right time, and then he's bursting through the secondary, and it's like, oh, right, that's what it's supposed to look like. Like, this is what we were looking for when we were watching the Stanford-Virginia Tech cut-ups.
Right. And, Michigan's tight ends have taken a big step forward as run blockers, mostly McCune, with Gentry to a slightly lesser extent, just because he's not quite as prominent as McCune. And you see a major upgrade when Elizio goes out for Bushel Beatty on the ground.
Yeah.
And Bushel Beatty is still a terrible, terrible pass protector. There were like two or three plays on this one where it's just like he's letting his guy immediately through the line, and I'm like, why do you have to be so bad at this and so good at the other stuff?
Yeah, Michigan only dropped back 16 times too, so,
Is that attempts or is that like attempts plus
that's
like
attempts
thunder
plus
sacks?
The three sacks.
So they drop back 16 times, and and one of them, Kugler doesn't get off his guy, and there's a sack up the middle, and then there's the thunder sack we've talked about. And Michigan didn't need to pass the ball, but at some point they are going to have to pass the ball. And that still feels like the downfall of this year's team. Like, unless they can just grind it out and manage their defense, holds it together, and they can win 17-12 against Wisconsin, it's going to be hard for them to score a lot of points against good defenses because they just can't pass protect.
Yeah, you're going to have to start making decisions between getting your quarterback potentially killed and just like not sending as many receivers out into routes. And against like Wisconsin, Ohio State, that's not ideal if you're running a bunch of like two or three man routes downfield.
I mean, that's what I would do though. I would just
I agree, but
Steven Spinellis gets to be like the extra right tackle,
like,
and
you've
got like two of them.
And you're just limiting your offense's upside a little bit at that point.
Yes, but you're also limiting its extreme downside.
Yes, that's, I'm in support of that, I think.
Yeah. The running backs looked excellent in this game, not just because they were getting plays that opened up for them, but Evans has a bounce outside after his guy gave up the corner, and that's a productive 10-yard run on which the bounce was the right and definitively the right idea. And then, of course, he has like a 60-yard touchdown where he breaks a linebacker's tackle, which I was like, okay.
Hello.
And then he manages to outrun the defense to the end zone. That was one of the few plays where Michigan, their blocking scheme wasn't executed well because you had two guys going to the same kickout block. And so there's a linebacker completely free. But Evans has so much room because there's another one of those blowout blocks. And he's just a little bit stronger. He's able to get that guy diving at his legs and kind of high steps through it. And that's the Chris Evans that I think everybody was hoping to see this year. And once he gets just like a little bit of blocking, you can see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just kind of need to, once you spring that guy to the second level, he's pretty special.
Well, and you've mentioned that, like, you just, it feels like when you watch an Evans run, all the time he's just getting buried in the backfield.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think if we did, like, a cut-up video of Chris Evans' runs this year, you'd have to set it to yakety sacks for most of it.
Yeah, I mean, Mathlete was talking, he's got, like, a your runs versus everybody else's runs, or your offensive contributions, and he like assigns a point value to them.
Yeah,
and like Chris Evans was like towards the bottom of all Power Five players,
and that's
not Chris Evans' fault.
No,
that's just some.
He's had like the worst blocking luck of any running back. I mean, because it's not that Michigan is terrible at run blocking. Like Higdon and Isaac get in and get
yards.
Yeah, and then poor damn Chris Evans is out there getting buried. So. Yeah. This was a nice reminder that he is, in fact, pretty darn good at football, and you just need to get him a little bit of a crease. Because his balance, I mean, finishing a couple of those touchdown runs, like he had some guys trying to knock him out down the sideline where he does a tightrope walk, and that applies between the tackles, too, when you got that level of balance.
Yeah, so
he could finish those.
He's not the most powerful guy, but he's agile enough to turn like a head-on tackle to like an arm tackle.
Yeah.
And then he can maybe run through a few of those.
We got a couple more like Ministry of Silly Walks pictures of him too, where he's got his legs up in the hole. He's got an interesting running style. I mean,
he gets his legs up when he feels contact is going to be around there because he doesn't want to get tripped.
Yeah,
and that the 60-yard touchdown I think is definitely one of the Ministry of Silly Walks items. And then we haven't really addressed Caron Higdon. Who
went off.
And the thing that impresses me the most is he's got pretty good long speed. Like, you don't expect that from a guy who's like a 3-4 star borderline guy, but like when he hits the open field, man, there's not a lot of guys who can make a productive angle happen for him.
No, I mean, we've had a few pictures of him now where he's kind of checking the scoreboard, and it's like there's nobody there, buddy. Like, you're gone. he's definitely got more top-end athleticism than I think we expected.
At this point, he's kind of a home run hitter because, like, if you get him that crack and you get him to the safeties, like, and you get him in the open field, he's gone.
Yeah.
And there's no Mike Hart stuff going on here.
And he runs efficiently, too. Like, he's become very north-south, and he's not trying to dance around too much. Like, he's...
Doesn't really have to very much.
No. Anymore. I mean, not with the way they're blocking, but it's nice to see because... With the lack of wasted motion with him, he's really able to hit the secondary at top speed when he gets going.
Yeah, there was an end zone shot of one of his like 10, 15-yard runs that's definitely going to be in the UFR that shows a really good job of feinting outside, getting a second-level guy to commit, and then coming back inside a block you always knew you were coming back inside of.
Yeah.
And that's what one-cut running is.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you set up a block and then you take it.
Right. So you threaten one gap and then you go in a different gap, and that usually often buys you a blocker.
Yeah.
So Higdon has become very adept at the proverbial one cut running, and I was complaining early in the year about zero cut running.
And I think we had some moments there.
They've done a lot better job of that. And the run game is verging on rampant. They're probably gonna crack the top 20. On S&P, they could be approaching top 10. And how much of that is real and how much of it is a mirage? We'll find out in the next 3 weeks. I think a lot of it is real.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost say no matter what happens against Wisconsin, Ohio State. We haven't seen Michigan execute run blocking up front like this under Harbaugh, even against the bad teams.
So, yes.
I mean, there's definitely progress that's been made. It'd be nice if it also carries over against the good teams. I would really like to see that.
I mean, I think it will against Wisconsin. It feels like they've... I'm just worried about them getting physically overwhelmed by the Ohio State defensive line.
It is a physically overwhelming group.
Unless they're playing Iowa for some reason.
We'll get to that later, too.
Woo! And then the passing game...
To the point that it existed?
It looked good for, like, the first drive and a half when it existed, and then Peters was dropping back and just eating sacks where it's just like he didn't have time to get the ball out at all. And they would run the ball, and then they would score, like, a 60-yard touchdown, so they didn't have, like, an opportunity to go back to the passing game very much.
No, and two of his eight completions go for 0 yards. So we're really working with, like, I mean, on some dinky little screen stuff, we're working with a very limited sample of anything here.
The first touchdown was a good RPS play since it was a throwback tight end screen where they went tackle over.
Yeah.
So the main reason that that was so wide open is that Minnesota was reacting to that like he was an offensive lineman.
Yeah, they just didn't realize he could do that. Mm-hmm. And that was nicely designed.
Yeah, they should give Wheatley like 16 so they could line him up next to Bushel Beatty or like instead of Bushel Beatty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thinking. Anyway. So I mean we didn't really get very much data on Peters.
No. He did have one like good throw that was negated by the ineligible man downfield on the first drive where that would have been like a 4-for-4.
Yeah.
Very efficient.
I mean, he looked good, and then because of the pass protection and the rampant run game, they were just like, well, we're just going to let this go, basically.
It was funny to see like people start calling for like, why aren't we passing it more? And it was like, well, first of all, the running game is working pretty darn well. And second of all, like, Peters is allowed to practice. Like, the people who are like, he needs to get his reps in. It's like, calling 3 or 4 more pass plays against Minnesota is not going to be the difference between, like, beating Ohio State and not.
Well, I think they would have, except, you know, the second half they went back and they tried it, and Peters was just getting snowed under immediately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the combination of the way the game was going and the plays that the offensive line was executing, I feel like... Just running that and calling it the way they did worked out just fine.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is I think Bushel Beatty is like verging on legitimately great.
As a run blocker. And there's something about just dropping into a pass set that is not...
so bad.
Is not he's, something he's good at yet.
He's just a disaster as a pass protector, but... he's like, I think he's an NFL guard, maybe. Like, I think he could play in the NFL as a guard. Except his pass protection might be too bad. Maybe he can go do sumo. I bet he'd be great at that. Probably not. That's probably... You have to, like, be born into sumo.
Yeah.
Your life.
Like he's, like, small for a sumo guy.
No. He's, like, 350. He could get to 350.
It's one of those guys walk around at, like, 550.
Okay, yeah, but he could get there. Like... He's a big boy.
Get there.
We can make it happen.
Back on an extra person.
I'm gonna be his sumo agent. That's probably not gonna happen.
MCO Block setting up careers for student athletes.
We should mention the injuries on Wainu, Perry, Walker, and Isaac all missed this game.
Yeah.
So
it's not ideal.
That's bad. And Walker's thing was pretty clearly an ankle.
Yeah. I mean, they announced that during the game that he had an ankle sprain.
Did
so.
I?
Yeah.
So that's why none of those people played. Someone was like, "Where's Kareem Walker?" And I was like, "Injured."
Yeah. It was funny to get. Yeah, there were a lot of like very accusational, like, "Why is this not happening?" tweets. And it's like, well,
yeah.
Circumstances.
I just remember all the people who aren't tweeting at me, and I'm like, "Those are good. Those are my people." All right. Let's take a break. Come back. Talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Yeah! It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlet, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
So we're back. Dave has shown us very many pictures of sumo people, some of which are clearly photoshopped.
Just the one, really.
And it's like 50-50. We think JBB could take half of them.
Some of them, at least.
Half.
Fair enough.
Well, this is a good bet, because we're never going to have
no.
to.
No.
Anyway, Kalik Hudson, man, had a game. I was getting increasingly worried that Hudson would just be this really boring guy, and I'd have to like dial back all of my Kalik Hudson hype.
But thankfully.
And now I don't.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
6.5 tackles for loss later.
And we think he might have been robbed of the sack on the grounding, because it's listed as Chase Winovich.
Yeah, it is credited to Chase Winovich in the box score.
So Kalik Hudson is tackling on that throw, and he should be credited with the sack. So if that's the case, that's 3 sacks, that's 7.5 tackles for loss, and that is a Michigan single-game record.
Yeah, sole possession of first place over Larry Foote right there.
So, like, if you know the official scorer, you can petition him to correct this grave injustice and put Kalik Hudson where he belongs, which is at the very top of single-game tackles for loss. And mostly this was a scheme thing.
Yeah.
So there were a couple like mesh points that weren't really mesh points, where Don Brown just like, okay, I've seen this before. You're not even pretending this is a real mesh. Just go get him.
Yep.
And Hudson goes and gets him. And a couple were like covered sacks. So he had both of his sacks were running the quarterback down from behind.
Yeah.
Where he's breaking the pocket. He's had a couple of reads. And Hudson is just like Jaws in the background. Doot, 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 doot. That's my Jaws impression.
It's up there with your accents.
I like my vodka. I am a shark.
I'm very visually faceballing right now.
That's a Russian Jaws.
Okay,
you got that?
I did get that.
Because I have to clarify to these people.
I mean, you had to, like, throw vodka in
right.
there.
Right, I like vodka. You know, I am a shark.
But, you know,
so
the stereotypes really drive home what you're trying to get at.
Hey, come on. Boogie boarder.
Damn it.
So, good job on the coverage there, and also Hudson's relentlessness, and his forced fumble was, like, I think he was definitely waiting for Croft to come back and try to throw so he could rip it out. And that was wonderfully executed.
Yeah, that was nicely done.
And then he just had a couple of like jet sweep stuff where they'd run the jet sweep so much that it's like, okay, we're going to sell out and hope that...
You're not faking it this time.
And they weren't. So I don't think that he had the best game in the history of Michigan football. But it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was nice. I liked it.
It was good.
Very impactful.
And then, like, they're calling him Jabril Peppers, and I was like, yeah, kind of.
They also called him Jevy and Clowney once, which was interesting comparison.
And Spencer Tillman kept saying he's got no responsibility. Like he was a six-year-old let loose on a football. Isn't it great to, like, not have any responsibility? Like, first of all,
That's not how this works. That's not how it works at all.
Like, when he blitzes, his responsibility is to, like, get the guy.
Like, you have a gap that you hit.
Right. And, like, on the first one, I think he did have a point where he didn't have quarterback responsibility because Michigan was blitzing the corner.
Yeah, there are certain reads you make where you then turn into a freelancer, but you still have a responsibility initially.
Well, no, so, like, his point was that he didn't check the quarterback, and that was fine because there was a corner blitz on.
Yeah.
But then he just kept going with it, like, oh, it's footloose and fancy free. Kalik Hudson likes vodka. He's a shark. He doesn't like vodka. He's underage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
too young.
Too young to be a Russian shark. But like a Belgian shark?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a Belgian shark.
He likes chocolate.
And cycling.
Yeah. That's the ticket. Eddie Merckx. Let's go.
Eddie Merckx. Wow.
Hey. Yeah. I'm not totally, like, sports ignorant.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Given
considering
your job.
My profession. Yeah.
Eddie Merckx. Wow. That's.
I watched some Tours de France back in my day.
Yeah. Not that day.
No, not that day.
That was like the 60s.
But
right?
They, you know, they do talk about the old guys.
They do. And back to football.
Back to football.
Mo Hurst continues being Mo Hurst. I don't know how else to say it.
He's rampant.
He hurled an offensive lineman back into the quarterback for two different sacks.
Yeah, he only gets credited with one and a half because somebody else got in there. It might have been the guard getting credited with half a sack. I don't know.
Hopefully it was Rashawn Gary because Rashawn Gary deserves some
poor
more stats.
Rashawn Gary. No, it was not Rashawn Gary.
It was not.
He was not credited with a sack or a tackle for loss. And or a solo tackle in this game because he is constantly getting robbed.
Life is unfair. And somebody on Twitter asked me, like, when was the last time a cornerback had been targeted?
Oh, boy.
And I was like, I can't remember. Was it the Indiana game?
Has it literally been multiple weeks?
I mean, there was like Hill in kind of like zone coverage on a rollout that he got like a half point in. On like last week,
there had to be some corners getting targeted in the Penn State game, right?
Yes,
that happened after the Indiana.
Yes, game. Like there was their guy, their like burly guy Johnson, like got a couple of catches, but that was so. It's been like three or four targets in
over the course
games.
Of three games, three yeah. or four games. That's not many,
which is insane.
And yeah, and once again, Hill is totally absent from the box score. Long is credited with one assisted tackle, and disappointingly, Brandon Watson was in on four tackles. So we're gonna have to have a talk with him about showing up at the box score. But
yeah, I mean, they started off, they hit like a couple of like RPO type slants, and
yeah, it looked like a shockingly functional passing offense for Minnesota for a couple plays in there.
Right, but I set the over under on Minnesota completions at 10,
mm-hmm.
and they got five.
They did.
And that didn't prevent someone on Twitter after like their touchdown drive being like, well, I thought this Minnesota passing game was supposed to be bad.
People really need to understand that like scripted drives are better than not scripted drives.
Exactly. And Minnesota started off, they had like a set of stuff that they wanted to do that was new, and it worked for a while. They had that kind of like edge pitch, which is actually like went forward.
Yeah.
Which was probably...
It was like a chest pass. It was strange.
It was probably like two of their completions, to be honest.
Like, ooh, I bet you're right.
Does Rodney Smith have like...
Yeah, he's got two catches for 4 yards in there.
They completed three passes.
They did. Oh, man. And so, they took 5 sacks.
So they had that ed pitch, and it felt like it worked once, and then it got tackled for loss kind of explosively.
Yeah, they had an 8-yard gain and a 4-yard loss.
So they had, and then they had like the jet sweep package, which is a little bit frustrating that it worked about 2 or 3 times more than I thought was good, and then they just downloaded it, and it was over. And then they kept running the Wildcat.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Which was not working even when they busted it out initially.
No. And it didn't work against Penn State.
Yeah. Like, no, they had the first run.
Right.
Which apparently was all that they watched on film, but they were like, we're doing that. And then they didn't adjust because, yeah, that was real easy to crush.
Well, and then the Hudson tackle for loss on one of those Wildcat snaps, they showed a replay of it, and the mesh point there is not even close to being anything approximating a legitimate mesh point.
Yeah.
So Hudson doesn't even have to check the quarterback because he knows the quarterback's not getting the ball. He can just run right at the running back. So they have a Wildcat. It didn't work against Penn State except for one big Rashawn Gary error.
Yep.
They haven't repped it enough to have a real mesh point, and they kept doing it in the second half. And I was just like, it blew my mind that they were like, let's go with this.
It could explain some Minnesota box scores from earlier this year.
Yeah.
Big Ten West football, it's not always pretty. In fact, it's almost never pretty. I'm not sure it's ever been pretty.
There are probably some Wisconsin runs that are pretty.
Yeah, you know, in that ugly, beady way.
Taylor Martinez's throwing motion, gorgeous.
Yeah, you know.
In a kind of, you could do this two way. Like, doesn't matter what your physical abilities are, you two can be Nebraska's quarterback. Probably literally true right now.
These days, yeah.
And Metellus got ejected for nothing.
Yeah, for like defending his teammate for getting punched in the head.
Yeah, so Cannell like is giving guy a little shove. And
a brutal, unnecessary shove,
and
Brian.
And Tillman's like, that guy should be gone.
Borderline felony.
Because the guy turns around and punches him in the face, which is always dumb. And Cannell like claps.
Yeah.
And like,
because Cannell has successfully instigated an unsportsmanlike conduct. And except.
And like, because you should clap if you got punched in your helmet.
Yeah.
Because you're wearing a helmet.
Yeah, you've caused another person to do one of the dumbest things you could do on this planet, which is to take your bare fist and hit somebody in the helmet with it.
And Metellus like comes up like he's a hockey guy and his goalie just got run over.
Yeah, which is, I think, is appropriate in that situation when a guy takes a full swing there.
Not when he's clapping. Like, Cannell's clapping. He's not on the ground.
I'll put it this way. There's no way that, like, that was, like, the least equal of, like, offsetting personal fouls.
Yeah, okay.
Like, one dude punched a guy, and the other guy ran up and grabbed the dude who punched his friend.
He didn't really grab him. He just got in his face like, hey, you're bad. I don't like you. That's exactly what they said.
Yes. Word for word.
Word for word.
Verbatim. Josh Metellus. Very polite in his trash talk.
Hey, man, please don't do that.
Pardon me, large human. I did not agree with your...
Fellow.
Shoving tactics.
Chap.
I would prefer you not engage in the fisticuffs.
And they booted him. They didn't even, like, you get a yellow card.
Yeah, you get your warning.
Yeah, and he didn't even get the yellow card. He just got immediately ejected. Because
that was kind of the surprise. Like, I can understand, you know, maybe a 15-yard personal foul flag there. But booting him straight out of the game was like, wait, what?
Like, he didn't do anything.
Like, he didn't punch a guy. Somebody punched a guy, but it was not Josh Metellus.
Just informed him that he was disappointed in his behavior.
Yeah. I thought it was very responsible of him. He should be rewarded for that.
Let's not go that far. Tyreek Cannell had a dislodged breakup on their last drive where they were trying to get a touchdown and they had to settle for a field goal. And other than that, like, under 200 yards again, they have the one touchdown drive, which is kind of par for the course for this defense where they give up the one drive.
Yeah. They didn't even really have the, like, suspenseful late we could get 200 yards drive.
No.
They only hit 164.
No, and it was very clear that they were not getting.
Yeah, they weren't. They weren't doing it.
So,
like, I basically don't remember anything that happened in the last like 8 minutes of this football game because it just was over.
Yes, I remember.
It just kind of ended.
The Canell breakup is about it. And I think that I think the ejections were in the last 8 minutes. I think.
But yeah, I was getting down there, but the end of that game.
So, I mean, the defense looks very, very good again, and it had to, because every offense in the league is completely terrible.
Yeah.
So there you go. Illinois is up next, not technically, but kind of. Who are we playing? Oh, Maryland. Yeah, pretty much Illinois.
Yeah, especially since Bortenschlager got dinged up in their games.
No,
they might be down another.
No way.
I mean, like it might not be like out for this week, serious, but they were playing like a fifth string walk on at the end of the game this week.
Oh my god! All right. Let's take a break. Come back. Talk. Going to have some Brian's basketball podcast along with Aces Hockey podcast.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Lantana Reed. Edamame, thank you for doing the Peppers one last week. Most people can't handle the Peppers. This one is just smooth and consumable.
That's
like
not a reed. That's just his message to us.
Like a wet Minnesota run defense.
Oh, Seth.
Seth, what are you writing down for us to read on the radio, it's literally.
Just, yeah, wet Minnesota run defense doesn't sound appetizing. It sounds like I'm about to like bite into like a furry drenched gopher.
Which is not at all what Lantana hummus tastes like.
No.
It is made with edamame and white beans and topped with roasted red pepper and toasted sesame seeds. It is delicious, unlike a soaked gopher, Seth. So check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer.
Oh, I didn't realize that was actually the read. That's how we do advertisements around here.
That's it.
We just start and then we say things and then things happen.
That's life.
I guess so.
That's life. When you don't prepare for anything, that's life. So pretty much the Minnesota offense in this game. We are the living embodiment you know, of running the Wildcat.
Yeah, you know, we almost figured out the mesh point there, but we didn't think that far ahead.
I thought it was strange that you were breaking in during my ad read, and you were just like, Seth, what are you doing? And I was like, yes, that's kind of the point. I was getting to that point.
Yeah, sorry, Seth. I didn't realize that was live fire there.
We're just joshing with wet Minnesota run defense. It sounds like...
Don't.
No, like there's a movie
okay.
called Wet Hot American Summer.
I wasn't sure where you were going.
No, not that kind of movie. It's a gopher. It's a totally different rodent. Are beavers rodents?
I wasn't going to say it so explicitly, but you just...
I pivoted.
I mean, yeah, I think to answer your question, I think so.
I was just like...
We've lost David. David's down for the count right now.
I was just... I pivoted to rodent, and then I forgot all about the context of what I was saying.
Might have lost me, too.
All right.
Woo.
All right, basketball happened.
Yeah, it sure did.
I didn't see any of it.
I watched a BT Plus stream.
I was watching the hockey game. I was at the hockey
game. Yeah, you were attending to your number two sport. I was attending to my number two sport.
Yeah.
Charles Matthews looked good.
Yeah.
That was kind of the big takeaway from this is he started out quite strong.
What did he do?
Well, for one thing, like he's a lot more athletic than a lot of the wings. I mean, Michigan's had some pretty darn athletic wings, but we're talking about a guy who's kind of in the GR3 mold of athletic, especially in terms of the versatility size combination that he brings, where, you know, we're talking at Media Day about how they want him, like he's already adept at guarding threes and fours, and they think they can get him pretty adept at guarding twos as well. And that's pretty nice to have on the wing, especially when your team starts Duncan Robinson.
I was about to say, so you say he darts fours.
Yes. And
so he's the power forward.
Yeah, Duncan Robinson was more on the perimeter in this game. That he's worked on his defense, but he's still Duncan Robinson out there. I mean, I don't want to bag on the guy, but he's never been particularly mobile side to side, and he just still has some defensive lapses that were a couple in this game.
Is Duncan Robinson is a sufficient description?
So that I think we can leave it there. But to go back to Matthews, I mean this was. An exciting performance from him. I mean, you've got to account for the Grand Valley State competition level, obviously, but to have him go 9-for-14 from the field and kind of show an ability to score on his own outside the confines of the offense, also within the confines of the offense, that was pretty encouraging. Something that might surprise people who have followed our off-season coverage and expectations is that Xavier Simpson started over Jaron Simmons. I wouldn't put a ton of stock into that yet.
It's early.
If you remember last year, Duncan Robinson started over DJ Wilson in the opener. That did not last. DJ Wilson is now in the NBA.
I don't remember that.
that did happen. So, you know, it was interesting on Media Day because they're very much trying to talk this up as if it's a three-person point guard battle. Beeline even kind of with very much with a smile on his face, brought up that it was shaping into a quarterback controversy, which I did not totally appreciate at that moment.
You should have said, you got some bad tweets, John.
It was a fiery take from John Beilein. But, I mean, it's pretty clear right now, both in the way they were talking about it when you kind of caught them letting their guard down a little bit and just how the substitution patterns worked out. This is kind of Simpson and Simmons as 1A and 1B, and then Eli Brooks is the third guy. He definitely has some promise, but I think Simpson's definitely the guy they trust most right now, which isn't a huge surprise considering how tough it is to download the Beilein offense in a short period of time. You do still see some of his limitations. He airballed a three, which was not ideal. He did show off a smoother, quicker release at media day in the open practice, and I'm hoping that carries over. But you know, the one shot sample in this game from beyond the arc was not great. And he also even against a team like Grand Valley, when he runs the pick and roll and tries driving it into the paint, finishing can be tough for him. He does go 2 for 3 on 2s in this game, so he was doing all right in that
regard. How many minutes?
He plays 18 minutes in this game.
Takes four shots.
Okay. So he's definitely not as high volume. Jerron Simmons, you can definitely see he's a more aggressive player. Has better size, has better finishing instincts around the basket, but is still definitely picking up the offense a little bit. So he was actually at about the same usage. He did can his 1 3-point attempt, which hopefully will carry over. He does have kind of a funky release a little bit.
Yes. Was that off the bounce or was that catch and shoot?
I believe that was a catch and shoot attempt, but
okay,
it's hard to go back and check on a BTN Plus stream, unfortunately. So this is all off the top.
I think Dotman, who's now on at 24/7 with everybody else,
yes,
mentioned that he was not much of a catch and shoot guy. He's more of an off the bounce shooter, and I know why. Because nobody ever passed him the ball.
Position to score in Ohio. He couldn't pass to himself, right. Really, and therefore, that wasn't really a part of their offense at all. But he does have. I was watching him closely at media day, and he does this. I don't know if he's ever going to be a real consistent 3-point shooter, just because he has this weird hitch in his release where he kind of brings the ball. He's a right-handed shooter, but he brings the ball over to his left by his left hip and then brings it up in front of his face and releases. And it takes a while.
He was a solid 3-point shooter last
year. Yeah, but I think that's kind of the expectation. I think you're looking at a 35% guy. You're not looking at someone who's going to replace Derek Walton's just ability to can anything off the dribble if he gets a sliver of space. That's going to be something the offense misses a little bit. Also, it was pretty obvious in this game that the chemistry with Mo Wagner is still being kind of worked on by everybody, and Wagner also just seemed a little out of sorts. This was not one of his best games, but that's...
So who scored all the points then?
Charles Matthews dropped 23.
Okay, but that was
Wagner had 10 points and Duncan Robinson has 11 because he hits 3 3-pointers. Because he is still very good at that aspect.
Right.
And they were quite good at... I did think Michigan, for how early it is in the season, looked pretty decent in transition, which Beilein had mentioned. And if their open practice sessions were any indication, this was not a lie, that they are working on transition quite a lot. In both on offense and defense. But there were a lot of fast break drills that they were running, and they were very good at finding Duncan Robinson on those fast breaks. I don't know if there's a more efficient shot in college basketball than Duncan Robinson on a fast break from beyond the arc. So
outside of 2 feet, yeah.
Yeah. That might be a more efficient shot than dunks, to be honest. You can only get two on those.
No.
Mild overstatement, but... he does look good.
Tell me about John Teske. Tell me that he rebounds and defenses.
So Teske was rebounding, and I thought he looked quite improved in terms of just knowing where to be. And he actually showed off some very intriguing passing skills. He had a beautiful little slip pass to E.B. Watson off a cut for an assist. He had 3 assists in this game.
Yeah.
in only 12 minutes.
I just want to hear about the rebounding and the shot altering and the general backup center being a black hole.
Four rebounds in 12 minutes, one on the offensive glass, finished two for three from the field.
Yeah.
He looked pretty viable. Like he looked obviously a lot more with it than he did last year. And that's a really difficult guy to move around. And I mean, he's going to be, I think, impactful on the glass, impactful as a shot blocker. And it does seem like he has.
Oh, it's so good.
It does seem like he's very clearly moved ahead of Austin Davis.
I like hearing it.
So we'll see. And then the other interesting kind of personnel note was that Ibby Watson ends up with 10 minutes and Jordan Poole does not get in until walk-on time in the final 2 minutes. He only plays 2 minutes in this entire game.
I bet that changes. I bet that's like a...
Yeah, Watson looked, all right.
Okay.
So we'll see. I mean, after last year, he definitely has a lot to prove.
Yes.
But I thought, you know, in a game where Brent Hibbets gets 4 minutes, it was a little strange to see Jordan Poole only get a couple.
Hibbets! He's Russian. See, Hibbets. He's a Russian shark.
Yeah, there.
Hibbets.
Yeah. Sure.
Why does anyone listen to this? I don't know.
It's a good question. And then the other thing to watch for is Isaiah Livers is he didn't make a huge splash in the box score, but he does look functional out there. And considering they're going to need somebody to play backup minutes at the forward spots, it's nice to see him look like he belongs out there.
Okay. Hockey split against Ferris State this weekend, and it was a very weird weekend. So they win 7-2 on Friday in the closest 5-goal game I've ever seen. So, I mean, they're up 3-2 in the third, and, you know, they give up a power play, and Ferris State comes close to tying it. They have a couple of good opportunities. And then Michigan goes down, and they score, and Ferris just kind of packs it in, and then the floodgates open. And then on Saturday, Ferris jumps out to like a 12-4 lead in shots. And then they have 10 shots like the rest of regulation. Michigan has 37. They're just putting it on them, but they can't finish. They can't solve this guy. And Michigan's kind of lack of skill at forward kind of catches up with them. And they score in overtime. And it's overturned because of goaltender interference. That was probably a correct call. And then Ferris State comes down, and then they score. And both of the last two goals that Levine gave up were pretty soft.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a disappointing loss against a team that's been struggling so far this year, but they double them up in shots pretty much. They have a couple of soft goals going up against them. So Cooper Marody is really kind of coming into his own as a scoring line player. He was really, really dangerous on both nights. And so you add him to Lockwood and Norris, and you're kind of getting the semblance of a top two lines that can be relied on-ish.
Mm-hmm.
The team looks a lot more organized. The team is dominating in terms of shots and Corsi. Corsi, not so much this weekend. It was closer than shots, but they're doing a good job, and I think that they're going to be in the conversation for a at-large bid. Not that there's a conversation, it's just a computer formula. But they're going to be in the formula.
I'll be right there.
And it's fun to go to Yost again, where the last year it's just kind of like, can we get this over with? And now it's like, I'm into the games now. So it's interesting because last year I was just like, Michigan would score and I'd be like, oh. And the other team would score and I'd be like, oh. And this year I'm like hanging on various shots. So that's nice to actually have a reason to care. That sounded like too much.
That was the most emo moment of this podcast.
That's not how I meant to say that. Nice to have something to care about in my life, finally. My 1.5-year-old son, I tire of him. Keeps making stupid jokes about Russian sharks. I can't stand it anymore. So that's hockey. That's basketball. Let's take a break, come back, talk to Jamie.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. Jamie Mack, what the hell happened in Iowa City?
I have no idea. It's one of those deals where we talk about this a couple of times of the year, how frustrating it has to be an Iowa fan. You know, because was that hard to do against Northwestern, Michigan State, Minnesota? Apparently it was.
You know, the thing that leaps out here is four interceptions for JT Barrett a week after paving Penn State, and given what happened in the Michigan State and Penn State game, I think it's clear that neither of those teams has anything approximating a pass defense, which makes it doubly unfortunate who we played at quarterback against those teams. But let's talk more about a 31-point Iowa victory.
Yeah, right. Sticking with JT Barrett, he only had 271 total yards yesterday on 48 throws and dropbacks for a total of 5.6 yards per one of those. Just to compare, that number was 7.5 per rush and dropback last week against Penn State, and was 8.8 in Big Ten play coming into the Iowa game.
And the helpful arrows from Dave are pointing at 6 carries for J.K. Dobbins, mm-hmm. and averaging 8.5 yards a carry. This happens under Urban Meyer.
Or twice a year?
Yeah, where they just forget about their running backs and they run J.T. Barrett all the time. And
yeah. And I know the easy analysis there is like, well, hey, wait, they were behind, so you got to abandon the run. But I think that's lazy analysis. It was only 31-17 going into the third quarter, and they started that half with 3 straight 3-and-outs, and they were passing the ball on 3rd-and-2, and it got deflected at the line. They were passing the ball on 3rd-and-5, and they flushed Barrett out of the pocket, and they got him down before he got to the line to gain. And during that stretch, that was the only time in the game where Ohio State's defense was containing Iowa's offense. So they had a shot at the start of the third quarter a couple different times to carve into that lead. And it's just like, give the ball to JK, dude. I mean, you know, he's been tearing it up ever since the start of the year, but they decided not to go that route.
It was especially strange because you could see, like, there were a couple times in this game where their lack of playmakers at receiver really stood out. Like, there was a deep ball to Terry McLaurin in the second half that he has a pretty good shot at that he allows to get raked out by a defensive back.
And Benjamin Victor drops a touchdown.
Yeah, like, yeah. So to then just keep throwing to those guys instead of giving the ball to Dobbins, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anybody in the Big Ten stealing money more than Zach Smith.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
Just stealing money.
They had a stretch there. It went from 17-17 to 48-17, which, by the way, that's the second 31-0 run Ohio State's given up in the calendar year of 2017 in the Clemson game. But so they had seven drives where they ran 34 plays and only gained 86 yards. And during that stretch, Iowa just blew up on offense. But they went punt, interception, punt, 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 interception, interception. They threw three picks, as I just detailed. They gained one first down on those seven drives.
That is heartening after the Penn State game where they just looked absolutely dominant.
So totally, are we at the point where we just want Michigan to offer any quarterback that Iowa wants? Because I'm getting there.
Guys who are just linebackers.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Josh Jackson had a crazy interception in this game. Pro Football Focus is talking him up big time. And he came out of nowhere. Like, he's like
he was like our fourth corner last year.
And, like, I don't even know if he was slated to start until fall camp, and he kind of just emerged as, like, the man.
He's been great all season. You know, that first game against Wyoming, I remember they were so hyped with Josh Allen at quarterback, but he was great that game, and that kind of set the tone for his whole individual season.
Yeah, and it's, the strangest thing about this game is that Akram Wadley finally does something. And through no fault of his own, Wadley has just been completely crushed this year because they can't block. And against this offense, against this defensive line, he finally gets to 118 yards on 20 carries. The backup transfer from Nevada, Butler, goes for 74 on 10 carries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was his best contribution of the season right there, too.
This is the strangest thing about this
game.
And
they do that, I think, down both of their starting tackles, too.
Like, yeah, they had two freshman tackles in the game yesterday.
And how I don't understand.
I don't know. I watched the game and I still don't know.
Like, it's just baffling because I've watched Ohio State the rest of the season and they just completely overwhelm everybody else's run game. And I don't know if Ferentz just rope-a-doped for the last 16 years and this was like his pendency breaker.
I mean,
he would do it. I'm not entirely facetious about that.
They did break out the throw to the long snapper in this game, so you know.
Yeah, they
wait. What?
They split their formation. They came out in a total high school trick play formation where they had seven guys off well past one hash, so that, and they were technically on the line of scrimmage. And the long snapper snapped it. Ace, wasn't this funny? They were like at the 18-yard line, and the guy faked the punt. You know, he play faked the punt and then threw it to the long snapper, who just streaked straight down. And he caught it and fell at the one, so they had to punch it in later. But I thought that was so funny that they fooled the Ohio State linebacker or whatever his position is as he was crashing in by doing a play fake punt.
And Kirk Ferentz has spent decades setting up that fake.
Yeah,
you have to believe the punt from anywhere on the field against Iowa.
Totally.
But also having the long snapper be an eligible receiver was a nice little wrinkle there.
Yeah, that's. That's a new one.
Yeah.
I mean, I only see plays like that in high school, except for on occasion. Remember Oregon and some other teams used to do that kind of stuff on, like, their extra points and whatnot, where they'd flank a bunch of people way off to one side. But to do it kind of as a regular play, that was a high school trick play. And it was a really low risk because they were already winning pretty handily at that point. That was sort of like the cherry on top of everything.
Iowa has almost 500 yards of offense in this game.
Yeah.
And I know that they rope-a-dope for Michigan and Ohio State a lot. We experienced that last year. Good God.
But still.
We lost by a point.
This was a different thing.
A point.
Well, it just makes, it just makes no sense. You know, quickly getting back to Wadley, he was 5.9 yards per carry. The first time all year he's been over 5 yards a rush. He did that 9 times last year. And in Big Ten play, they've had 61 drives coming into the Ohio State game in Big Ten play. They only scored touchdowns on 16 of those with 31 punts. You toss out their Illinois effort, and it's 10 touchdowns and 48 drives with 28 points. Even with Illinois, 24 yards per possession in Big Ten play. Yesterday, scores on 8 of 12 drives versus the Buckeyes, and they averaged 40.5 yards per drive. We've been screaming about the lack of playmakers and lack of offense all year out of Iowa City, and now you look back at their season, and you're just like, you know, just do a little bit of this in some of these other games, and you might be right up there with a chance to win the division against Wisconsin. But as it stands, they're still, you know, obviously trailing in that race big time. It's over, actually.
Yep. I mean, they'll get the sweet reward of the Citrus or Outback Bowl now, it looks like.
Yeah.
The one thing
that did catch my eye a little bit as far as maybe down the line, you know, for Michigan is that the tight ends were pretty dominant in this game for Iowa. TJ Hackenson and Noah Fant. We've been talking about Noah Fant all year as one of their top playmakers. But they were really good. And, you know, Michigan has a lot of tight ends. So
all right,
maybe somehow they can conjure up a passing game with that.
I think we've gloried in our Schadenfreude enough.
I guess.
All right, we're in agreement. So let's move on to Northwestern 31, Nebraska 24. In overtime, Northwestern's third consecutive overtime win, which has never happened before, and that's why. That's why Pat Fitzgerald plays for overtime with a 7-point lead.
totally.
That's how you gotta do it.
He knows he's got it.
Tanner Lee throws three picks for Tanner Lee fans out there. Which I guess
Clayton Thorson counters with two.
Yeah, that's two.
It wasn't quite enough.
Who are the Tanner Lee fans out there, other than his immediate family, girlfriend,
Todd McShay?
I don't know.
Todd McShay,
Mike Riley.
Oh, Teddy Greenstein bought that hook and line singer. Anyway, Northwestern outgains Nebraska by almost 150 yards in this game.
Yep.
They have one fewer turnover. They have a couple more yards per play, and yet it still goes to overtime because Pat Fitzgerald wants it to be so.
Hmm. Yeah, he's got the whole game plan set to overtime. Just set the cruise control to overtime, and we'll take care of it. They really did dominate the box score. They won the yards per play by a full yard, 5.9 to 4.9. Other than Pat Fitzgerald's strategy to get to overtime, the other reason why it made overtime is because you detailed the five combined interceptions by both teams, but it was a Clayton Thorson interception that was returned for a touchdown. So that gave them, you know, easy points. And the other really kind of like, whoa, what just happened moment of the game was Nebraska had back-to-back 40-yard plays for an easy touchdown. You wipe that two play 72 yard drive out, and they're not even averaging 4.4 yards per play in this game against Northwestern.
I think it's par for the course, really. Northwestern is somehow 6-3 now.
I mean, I guess it'll happen when you win three straight overtimes while playing in the Big Ten West.
Yeah.
They've
got a shot at 7-2 in Big Ten play.
Yeah, that closes with Purdue, Minnesota, and Illinois.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They're going to be 9-3.
That's what I've said, like, when I look at every remaining schedule of the Big Ten. It's just like, oh, dear God, it's so easy.
right.
Speaking of teams with surprising records, Rutgers 31, Maryland 24, we are down to 10 conference rooms at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor downtown.
They're demolishing them in here as we speak. They're removing rooms from this building.
Rutgers wins this game by completing 8 passes, as one does. Max Bortenschlager goes out. Did he leave this game?
He did leave this game.
He left with an injury.
Who came in?
Ryan Brand, alleged human.
Yeah.
is that like on his ESPN page?
No, it just says Ryan Brand. But I think he's a walk-on.
He's a walk-on, and he was forced into the game on their last drive, when they were down a touchdown, and he actually drove him down the field, but you know, eventually, you know, he started throwing incomplete passes and they turned it over on downs. They had a sack that put him in a 3rd-and-20 situation at the Rutgers 25. And you know, they couldn't convert the first down from there, but it was weird. It's like, oh my gosh, Maryland is playing now their fifth quarterback this year. You know, the Henderson kid has played a little bit, so I'm stretching it to say five. But he drove him right down. And I'm like, maybe this guy's not worse than Ortenschlager? I don't know. We'll find out next Saturday.
He's taken an interesting path to the field. He is actually from Detroit. He went to Detroit Jesuit, went to Air Force as a three-star dual-threat guy, then played last year at a JUCO, and now is at Maryland. He's also 5'11", 182 pounds.
Oh, yeah, wow.
He was the Air Force.
Yeah, that is an Air Force-sized quarterback. It's not a Big Ten-sized quarterback, but we'll see how that goes.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, well, outside of throwing the ball, that last drive that he took him down the field and almost tied it on was sort of an Air Force-ish as far as time of possession. They had the ball 6 minutes and 39 seconds, 17 plays for 63 yards, and that was like the last 7 minutes of the game was that drive. So it was a pretty quick game. Rutgers, though, they've won three Big Ten games. They've got something going with Gus Edwards, and we're sort of their biggest fans down the stretch, aren't we?
No.
No? Not at all?
Never.
Never? I don't know. We might need an upset from Rutgers.
I'm not
Chris Ash.
I mean, if I watch a Rutgers game, I'm probably going to be like, I hope they beat Michigan State or Ohio State.
Yes.
But I'm not going to be like...
I'm not hitching my wagon Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
I know.
Cable subscribers.
When we were driving back from the game last night, somebody just kind of threw out to the room, okay, does anybody know what the Michigan divisional chances are? And I'm like, well, I said, they need upsets from Maryland and Rutgers. And like the car just quieted. Like,
yeah.
The conversation. Everybody's like, oh.
Yeah, because the scenario, Michigan State need them to lose to Ohio State and then
lose
to Rutgers or Maryland. And Penn State, it's lose to one of Rutgers, Maryland, or Nebraska, which might as well be one of those other two teams right now.
That could happen. And we're definitely going to beat Ohio State by completing four passes.
Oh, yes.
That's happening. Anyway, Purdue 29, Illinois 10. Purdue finally converts their massive down-to-down advantage into a win against a bad team.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about this game.
That's fine.
I appreciate Purdue putting up 29. That's a very Brian predicts the score. So good job, Jeff Brom.
Yeah.
Illinois.
How did that happen, by the way? How did they get 29? They go for two at the end of the game, like total, like, hose
they
beasts?
They did. They,
oh, my God, they
were,
did.
Yep, they were at 16-10, and they scored a touchdown to make it 22-10, and they went for two, and they did not get it.
Yep.
And then they tacked on a touchdown later on in the game.
Oh, okay. That's actually a justifiable 2-point conversion. Never mind. I was
hoping for gratuitous.
But... Yeah, I mean, just like put it on Lovie Smith and be like, "Hey,
does anyone really need to put it on Lovie Smith right now? Yeah. Like that dude's going through enough."
I think we already had that segment, by the way.
Lovie Smith and the Illinois pulled off a typical Lovie Smith drive. Like, I say this a lot. I feel really bad for the Bears Illini fans out there who've had Lovie Smith as their coach pretty much their whole lives. They had a 14-play, 40-yard drive that ended with a field goal.
Oh, my God.
That took 7 minutes of the clock in the second quarter.
All right, moving on. Wisconsin 45, Indiana 17, and a game that is actually fairly competitive until late when Lego throws a couple of picks. And Wisconsin punches in. It was 24-17 in the third quarter. And I mean, they went back to Lego in this game, and it didn't really happen for them.
I mean, This game kind of plays out exactly as you'd somewhat expect an Indiana game against a ranked team that they're trying to upset. You know, they hang around, and then everything and falls apart.
Yeah. Well, I do feel bad for Simi Cobbs because the Wisconsin cornerback on him was interfering, I think, literally every time they threw it to him, and they hit him with, like, three or four flags, and then Indiana's, like, trying to tie it, and they throw a back shoulder to him, and it's clear interference, and it's second and 10, and so they don't get that call, and they end up punting.
The refs hit his quota for the afternoon.
Right, and it's just, I mean, for one, the guy is wearing a hoodie. I root against any football player wearing a hoodie on the field of play. And for two, he's just every play. It's just like blatant interference, and eventually they
Cobb's touchdown catch probably should have been interference.
Yeah.
I mean, they called it, but he still caught it. Yeah. So yeah, you're right.
He's quite good.
He is quite good, unless David Long's killing him.
Yeah.
Damn straight.
Well, that's unfortunately all that Indiana really has on offense these days. They opened up a 10-0 lead, but then their last eight drives of the game, they could only muster up 84 total yards. And within those eight drives, they actually had a six-play, 65-yard touchdown drive. So those other seven drives were just not good. They had a couple one-play drives thanks to turnovers. They had a pair of three and outs in that stretch, and they had one first down and out. And just during that stretch, Wisconsin just finally got its running game going. Jonathan Taylor, 29 for 183, and they scored on five of their six second-half possessions. So, I don't know. I'm a little jaded as an IU fan. I kind of roll my eyes now when people say, well, you know, they hung around, you know, but it's just, to me, it's just the same script. It's just a matter of waiting for it to play out.
Yes, sir. And then Michigan State 27, Penn State 24.
One quick thing. Can I interject one quick thing about the Wisconsin game? Because I think it's important going forward for Michigan.
Yeah.
Is their big wide receiver, Quintez Cephas, went out of the game, couldn't put any pressure on his leg. That could be a real serious injury, you know, and they don't have a lot of talent at wideout. Remember, he's replacing Jazz Peavy, who was supposed to be their number one guy, who's been out most of the year with injury and personal reasons. So, you know, Hornibrook kind of milks Fumagalli and Cephas. So those are his two targets. It's a pretty solid 1-2 punch. So it'll be interesting to see how this passing offense goes forward here in November, especially when they play Michigan.
All right, Michigan State 27, Penn State 24 in an aerial explosion as both teams discover that neither has a secondary.
Right.
LJ Scott runs for 3.1 yards a carry. Saquon Barkley runs for 4.5 yards a carry. And
he
McSorley
had no rushing yards at halftime.
Well, they didn't.
They didn't run
the ball. They just
right.
And McSorley and the work.
He complete a 20-yard pass.
That's true. They combine for 103 passing attempts in this game.
That is a lot.
Wow. Yeah, they both went over 400 yards, didn't they? Or came close to it.
McSorley came up just short at 381.
Yeah, but add in Barkley's and they get up to 401 passing yards. So.
Oh, that's right, yeah. But three picks from McSorley doom Penn State in a game that was weird and disjointed because there was a 3.5-hour rain delay. And, of course, Michigan State lucks it out because, hey, that's
and
what
I
do.
Somebody was tweeting last night, I think it might have been Robbie Calland, about Michigan State's incredible ability to summon bad weather into games against good teams.
Yeah.
And that was very dead on.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that the rain delay thing, I think that sort of hurt Penn State's offense to a certain degree, because when that rain delay hit, one thing I was looking at in the box score was Gesicki and Hamilton, you know, because they sort of rolled it up against Michigan, but then the two of them were really contained against Ohio State. And at the break, which is in the middle of the second quarter, they had 12 catches for like 160 yards, but the two of them only ended up with 15 catches for I think 203 yards here, if I'm doing the math right. So the last 2.5 quarters, despite the fact that everybody was throwing the ball, you know, their two big guns only caught three passes after the rain delay. And I thought that was interesting. I don't really know if Michigan State adjusted there or if Penn State just completely kind of lost their plot as far as getting those two involved. But, you know, it was just those three drives. They scored two touchdowns on their first three drives before the rain delay. And they were just a video game with Gesicki and Hamilton. It was just like, okay, keep doing this. You're going to run Michigan State out of the field. And then the rain delay happened, and those two guys kind of disappeared.
Yes, sir. So various divisional things are now in play.
So frustrating.
Whatever those are.
You know. They
require Rutgers making a bowl game, basically.
Yeah.
The hopes are contained.
Indeed.
But we just need a team effort out of Rutgers, Maryland, and even Penn State to see if the three of them can find a way to give Michigan State and Penn State, you know, a loss. I'm a little disheartened that we have to cheer for Ohio State over Michigan State. I'm still a little singed from what happened 2 years ago in that situation.
Well, you know, I'm not really going to be rooting very hard either way because the possibility of a division title still seems very, very far off.
Yeah, and the easiest way to finish in first place in the division would be a logjam at 6-2, and there's no way Michigan doesn't win any tiebreakers in that situation.
Yes, but we will feel good about ourselves. We'll be like, we did it, sort of.
No, I'll feel pretty solid about their second half if they actually do that.
That's true. because that means they
won
out.
Which yeah.
That'd be nice.
We'd take that. We'd absolutely take that.
Yeah, I mean, if they win out, that's New Year's Six pretty easy right there.
And I think everything is setting up for another crazy divisional race next year because, you know, Michigan's obviously going to get better. Michigan State's a really young team. Ohio State. Penn State has to replace a lot of dudes, but they also have a lot of dudes coming back.
But they have to replace one particular dude who I think everybody would be like, please, yes, thank you, go away.
Joe Moorhead?
That's another one.
We also have to replace their whole secondary going into next year.
Well, that might be a good thing after Saturday.
We've seen how that worked out for Michigan. It's worked out all right for Michigan in the fact that, you know, the cornerbacks have been a huge surprise and there's been almost no drop-off. But we've seen in big spots where the safeties have kind of been exposed. And that's the strength of Penn State's secondary is those two safeties, Marcus Allen and Apke. They've been making big tackles for them for 3 years. And they're going to be gone next year. So I'm hoping next year Penn State gets what's the term you say about safety? They get exciting safeties next year, right?
Yeah, interesting safeties, yeah.
Interesting safeties, right, yeah. But, we'll see how it plays out. Michigan has jumped from 99th nationally in yards per play to 69th just in the last 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah. I thought I'd throw that in.
We've talked about their pending S&P rush ranking, which we think is going to be pretty good now. Already 21st before they paved Minnesota, and paved they did.
Man, there was a point yesterday where both Teron Higdon and Chris Evans had twice as many, each of them individually, at one point yesterday had twice as many rushing yards as Minnesota had total yards. Like right after Evans' long touchdown run, that's when that statistical sort of full moon there happened. And I was like, all right, I like this. I'm sure you detailed this already. Minnesota's rushing defense wasn't that bad coming in.
They were bad.
No, they were. I saw a stretch of yards per carry, lift the yards per carry that they weren't giving up big time yards per carry. So I was sort of like, ooh, not bad, because Michigan was like over 10.
Well, S&P hates that.
Yeah, the stats were a bit of a facade, I think. But
so
Michigan still almost had the first 200 running back duo in a game in school history. So
yeah, they really should have worked.
Wow.
Yeah, I was definitely hoping they'd put Evans back in for that last drive instead of giving Omori Samuels a carry. But
meh.
So it goes.
All right. Thanks for talking to us, Jamie. We will talk to you next.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender along with Brian Cook, and I would like to just reiterate my offer to Fox Sports to provide my services as chief enunciator to their college football broadcast team.
I like vodka. I am a shark.